This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I mean, it just is a great song. I mean, there's nothing you can do.
It's a fantastic song by Toto. It's one of their finest offerings.
You know, people think Toto's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
Not true. They have like at least three sillies.
Well.
At least three.
But everyone does think about one.
Do you know that the guys...
Africa.
I mean, that. How much money do you think they've made off that, just that song? I mean, well, many, many millions.
I have a nugget for you. So, when this album came out, I don't know, whatever, you look it up.
Yeah, early 80s.
Right? 80, 81.
The guys in Toto, I know Ryan Wilson's on hold. I'm gonna learn him something. The guys in Toto were actually, like, producers... for Michael Jackson's, I think it was his Thriller album.
It's a good one to be
a producer
on.
So, like,
on.
If you look up some of those songs, I don't want to be wrong. I'm sure I'm wrong, but like Human Nature, or like they put out like three or four sillies that they wrote or produced for, and then they came out with their own side project, Toto.
Very nice.
Which blew up.
Sweet.
There's a nugget for you.
Very good. All right, let's go to the BetQL guest hotline. Say good morning to our friend Ryan Wilson from CBS Sports. He's an NFL writer. Ryan, good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys. How's it going?
We're doing well. You know, usually at this point in the NFL season, I'm perusing, you know, being here in D.C., I'm perusing a lot of mock drafts for the next season because usually there's no hope of playoffs or a contending team. My consumption of mock drafts for 2025 has been very light because the Commanders are out to a very surprising 6-2 start. What is your take on the Commanders thus far? Did you see any of this coming with Jaden Daniels? Because he's been a superstar.
You know, I don't like to brag, but I think you guys probably owe me a debt of gratitude. And I say that because my podcast co-host Rick Spielman was hired by the owner there to bring on the general manager.
Yeah. And
Rick doesn't like to talk about it, but I'll talk about it since he's not here.
Okay.
And obviously he loved Adam Peters, and obviously Adam Peters could not have been a better fit because everything that's happened since then appears to be the exact right move from the head coach. And I don't know how you guys felt about it at the time, but I know that some fans weren't super pumped about the idea of Dan Quinn because he wasn't a new, fresh name as a head coach, but he's been the exact right guy, and obviously Jaden Daniels, the second overall pick, and then all the draft picks. I love the draft class when it happened. I feel great about it now. Some of the guys obviously are standing out outside of the quarterback, and I have a lot of friends. I lived in D.C. for a while, so I have a lot of friends in D.C., and what happened on Sunday, and I'm old enough to remember when Joe Gibbs and Joe Theismann and all those guys were winning Super Bowls. It felt a lot like that in the middle of the season.
I agree.
I'm sure a lot of young Commanders fans have no idea what those old days used to be like. And it was. You talk about Toto and Africa, Africa and all that other stuff. This felt like going back in the Wayback Machine in terms of the way social media was, at least, seeing all these celebrations around D.C.
It's what I keep telling people, because people want to talk about it on the street more than ever. And especially people like, honestly, like 35, like, you know what I mean? 30. It's not like they're 17, like people like 35, 34, 32, like this is how it used to be. It used to feel like this in the 80s, you know,
early 90s.
Yeah, it used to feel like this all the time.
It's been so long.
The last 30 years, it's just like crept up on us. But those of us that are of our generation, okay, you had the 70s where we were mediocre and the dead skins and all that. But the 80s, it was like us and the Niners. Like, we were beasts.
I mean, when's the last time you saw that stadium go that nuts after a win?
Well, I'm not sure this stadium has ever
seen
like that.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Hey, Ryan, let me ask you this. Have you talked to anybody in Chicago? Where are you based? I'm sorry.
I have. I live in upstate New York.
Okay.
I grew up in North Carolina.
Right. Have you talked to anybody in the media about what happened at the end of his last two plays?
Well, yeah, both in the media and fans, and sometimes that person is one of the same. And the concern has been the concern that it's always been, what is the coaching staff doing? It starts with Matt Eberflus. They weren't convinced that Matt should have been retained. And it was sort of steady as she goes through the first half of the season with the way Caleb was coming along, and there were questions about the play calling with the new offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. Things seemed to have gotten better, and then I think we saw an abrupt turn when the way the game ended and the way that Matt Eberflus explained why the game ended the way it did. Now, Kyrie Stevenson stuff aside, that's one thing, but in terms of Eberflus not necessarily thinking that there was much he could have done differently, and then you hear Dan Quinn talk about how important it is to defend the Hail Mary and your approach to doing so. I think that if it's not the last straw, we're getting close, because this is a perfect example of how you handle a young quarterback in two completely different ways. One, where you're having sort of the Houston Texans one-year turnaround success with a new coach and a new GM and a new quarterback, and the other in Chicago, where it's status quo, except for you got the number one overall pick, and you got what many people, myself included, thought was the best player in the draft. And what are we doing? So we'll see how this goes. But it's a stark contrast and when you view it in the lens of doing things exactly the right way, getting everything right, and then trying to piecemeal some things together with a couple better players, but you're not really making many changes at the top of the org chart there.
Now, I'm obviously biased, but I'd be curious to know, if you had to redraft right now and do your little fan, would you still have Caleb as the number one guy in the draft? Not to say he's been bad, because he's certainly got a lot of talent.
No, of course not. If you did that, you should be working for the Jets, and then you should immediately be fired. Now you have to take Jaden Daniels. I mean, let's be real. Caleb has actually been relatively good, but this isn't Bryce Young versus CJ. CJ was outstanding last year, but Jaden's actually playing better through 8-9 weeks than CJ did last year. That's how good he's been, and wow. And what he was able to do last Sunday with a rib injury, because I went back and watched all the throws yesterday, and I'm like, dude, please get out of bounds, please slide. But he's playing like he's 100% healthy in terms of the way he's running around.
Right.
Forget the throws, the 61-yarder down the field, and then, of course, the Hail Mary, which was just all sorts of special.
Right. Ryan, let's talk about another young quarterback. If you were advising Shane Steichen, if you were in the inner circle, are you going to tell him to start Anthony Richardson this weekend against the Vikings, or are you going to have him turn to Joe Flacco? I know my answer. I want to hear your answer.
Well, the follow-up is, are we trying to win now, or do we want to see what we have? Because it feels like the clock on these young quarterbacks has been accelerated, right?
Big time. Where we
guys used to get 3 years, whatever. I mean, Kenny Pickett got kicked out off the team over the summer after 2 years. Will Levis's hold on the job feels pretty tenuous right now. I know he's quote-unquote injured, but we might see Anthony Richardson come out with a similar sort of quote-unquote injury, because he has been at times special and most of the time hard to watch. And this is the cautionary tale of drafting guys who've played 13 games in college football,
totally,
who are incredibly and special talents. There's no doubt about it, but you got to be able to put it together and have these building blocks. Not saying it has to be a linear progression where you're better each week no matter what, but, man, there have been some pretty big potholes that he's run into in terms of bumps in the road, and it's you just don't know. And I think the other story is, look, we're going to take you top 10. If you stink 17, 18 games into this thing, we got to make some tough decisions. I would start Joe Flacco and let him take a mental break, but there's a reason Bryce Young ain't going to play again in Carolina. I mean, he's playing because Andy Dalton's hurt, but in terms of his future there, it's going to be a short-term situation. I think Anthony Richardson has a chance to be good, but you have to be able to do the little things. We just haven't seen the little things, the silly mistakes that good players can avoid, and we have yet to see Jaden Daniels suffer from. Even Caleb's done most of the things you want him to, but I would give him a break. I don't think it's going to affect him above the neck, and Joe Flacco has proven that he can literally get off the couch and take your team to the playoffs. He did a year ago with the Cleveland Browns.
Talk about what you're seeing from the Lions, and specifically Jared Goff. No one really talks about Goff for MVP. They talk about Lamar and some of these other guys, and how some people are throwing Jaden Daniels' name in there. But Jared Goff, in the last 3 weeks, actually 4 weeks, has 13 incompletions total. And he's got 3, 5, 7, 8. He's got 10 touchdowns, no picks in the last 4 weeks. And they've scored 40 or more 3 out of the 4 times. I mean, what they're doing to teams, and pretty good teams, by the way, Minnesota, Dallas, and Seattle, they're just a machine. Talk about what you're seeing from them, specifically with Goff.
Yeah, a couple things. So, again, it points to the importance of ownership understanding how to get it right. And that started with the front office, Brad Holmes, with Dan Campbell. Brad Holmes had a relationship with Jared Goff when they were in L.A. together, brought him over. And most people, myself included, thought, all right, well, clearly the Rams are winning this trade with the Matthew Stafford situation. It's been a wash. And Stafford's special, and they won a Super Bowl. I get that. But this Lions team is one of the best teams in football because of Jared Goff and the offense. And brings us back to Ben Johnson, who I'm sure some Commanders fans were interested in as potentially being a head coach. But he's exactly where he needs to be because the things he's doing with that offense has been truly special. But I think the other lesson, and we just talked about benching young quarterbacks, Jared Goff is a perfect example of someone who needed time to grow into the job. And, yeah, I understand he was with Sean McVay for the first few years of his career and got to a Super Bowl. But it didn't all come together until the last few years here in Detroit. And I bring that up because clearly patience is hard to come by in the NFL where you must win now, and I get that part of it. But also because I see a lot of Jared Goff and Carson Beck, to sort of turn this back to college for a second.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is this. Is Carson Beck ever going to get to be Detroit Jared Goff, or is he always going to be L.A. Rams Jared Goff if you're thinking about taking him in the first round? And the second half of that answer to that question is it depends on who you surround him with. Because Jared Goff's done a lot of this work by himself. I get that. But you put him on a Browns team, it probably doesn't look the same as what he has here because of the way this team is drafted and signed players and the centerpieces they have, whether it's Penei Sewell at tackle or whether it's Aiden Hutchinson when he's healthy or Kirby Joseph or Brian Branch, the way they're playing in the secondary. So I think it's been a group effort, and it certainly helps to have a franchise quarterback have it all come together, and that's what Jared Goff has been. Good luck trying to beat this team. If you have them down 14 points in the fourth quarter, that game is nowhere close to being over just because they are so explosive offensively.
All right, I'm going to throw a true-false to you that we kind of threw out to our show for the last segment. True or false? The Eagles win the NFC East.
I'm going to say false. Only they're playing really well right now, but only because I rarely do I get these things right preseason, but I picked the Commanders to win preseason. So ooh. I'm going to say false.
Wow.
Wow, okay. Look at that. You've been on the Commanders early.
Yeah. Well, I get a lot wrong, so I got to lean into the ones that I get right. But they're playing really well, and I think there's something to that, too. I was trying to figure out when it was all going to come together with the new OC. His name escapes me, but it was a Dallas from the Chargers before
Kellen
that.
Kellen Moore.
Thank you. Yep. Yeah. So when was that going to happen? And it appears to be working. And Vic Fangio's defense is playing a little better. And there were a lot of questions about Jalen Hurts. And what's going on with him as the OC carousel was going on the last few years? Did people want Nick Sirianni fired, so on and so forth? But they're playing a lot better. But in terms of, it'll be interesting once you get into the NFC East. But I'm going to stay with the Commanders for now because, like I said, rarely do I get something right so late in the season.
Talking to Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports NFL writer, you cover the draft 365 days a year. I saw your last column. You have two Colorado Buffaloes in your top five picks. What do you see in Shador? And you got Travis Hunter number one.
He's sick.
Yeah, he's special. It's incredible what this young man does each and every week, and he somehow seems to improve on it. The only issue is where do you play him at the next level? And the consensus, I talked to a couple of scouts before the year, and they were like, he's much better as a cornerback, and he can't play, you know, he's not playing 120 snaps a game in the NFL like he does now.
Right.
So what do you do there? There's a better chance to get hurt as a receiver, anecdotally, than maybe as a, because you're getting hit as opposed to hitting. But I think the people come around to the idea of, well, you play him on defense, and then you have 15 or 20 snaps for him on offense, because there's no way you can leave that sort of productivity on the sidelines. And in a draft with not great quarterbacks, this isn't like last year's class, there's a real good chance, especially if the Patriots, for example, stay in the first pick, that the quarterback isn't going to go first overall. But his teammate Shador, for me, is my quarterback one now. And I say it with that sort of tone in my voice because it's close between him and Cam Ward, but also with the understanding that, again, there's no Caleb Williams, there's no Jaden Daniels coming out of nowhere to sort of make his case as QB1 or QB2. So if you're looking for a quarterback, it won't be as bad as the Kenny Pickett draft from a few years ago, but you're going to have to make sure there's an infrastructure in place for whether it's Shador or Cam Ward or Garrett Nussmeier is the name that's been mentioned, who I liked a lot, and this sort of had some issues in the second half on Saturday. But there's going to be depth at other positions for sure. Edge rusher, cornerback, running back's pretty deep. Ashton Jesse's a lot of fun out of Boise State if you're looking for Jahmyr Gibbs type player. But quarterback is going to be an interesting journey because there's going to be not going to be the guys to choose from that we had even a year ago.
The Jets are just atrocious. What do you see happening the rest of the way? And then do you see Aaron Rodgers back next year?
I said after they traded for Devontae Adams, I wasn't sure either one of them would be back after the year, no matter what happened. And I never had high expectations for this team because I didn't get why we would think they should be good. They signed a couple of older offensive tackles, and they've held up okay. But Aaron Rodgers looks nothing like the Aaron Rodgers we're accustomed to. And I think Devin Gottschall said it after the Patriots game, the defensive lineman. He said, yeah, that guy, I was running him down. He weighs 300 pounds. So if he's not what he once was, and their record is worse now than I think it was a year ago with Zach Wilson when he came in, what are we doing?
I never would have thought five straight losses, Ryan.
Yeah. So
especially with that defense.
And that's the thing. Mm-hmm. And that's a thing that I'm sure that Aaron Rodgers thought, okay, we just get a couple of my guys in here, we'll be fine. It hasn't worked. And I know people are coming down on Garrett Wilson for not being the precise route runner they want him to be. And obviously Devontae Adams isn't the same guy he was 5 or 6 years ago. And then the defense has struggled. Now, they've had some injuries, but everyone's been injured, so that's not an excuse. But they haven't played nearly at the level they did a year ago. But it's one thing to lose to Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh. It's another thing to lose to the Patriots when Jacoby Brissett has to come off the bench, basically in a wheelchair, and he beat you last second drive there. I mean, there's no coming back from that. So you can argue about the owner being a meddling owner and things not working out, and that's fine. You can argue the quarterback is over the hill, and maybe that's fine too. But there's no short-term solution. You fired the guy, Robert Saleh, and things got worse. So what the fix is, I don't know, other than trying to start over. But again, they've consistently made bad decisions, so I don't know what starting over gets you.
They'll be drafting somebody at that position.
Yep, certainly will. Ryan, is always good catching up with you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, guys.
Yep, that's Ryan Wilson, CBS Sports NFL writer. Don't forget, later at 9 o'clock, we'll be joined by Brian Robinson from the Commanders. When we come back, we'll talk about the Commanders' defense. How did they get it turned around so quickly? They're 14th in yards allowed per game, 10th in scoring defense at points per game at 20.9. We'll discuss the turnaround for the Commanders' defense next here on The Fan.